My name is Ziggy. I'm an addict. Welcome to the Overtime Not Overnight Workshop of WCNA 31. My name is Ziggy, and I'm an addict. Can we please open this meeting with a moment of silence, followed by the serenity prayer? God, grant me the serenity to accept things that I cannot change, courage to change things that I can't, and the wisdom to know the difference. I've asked Allison T. to read what is the Narcotics Anonymous program.
Addict called Allison.
Hey, Allison.
What is the NA program? NA is a nonprofit fellowship or society of men and women for whom drugs have become a major problem. We are recovering addicts who meet regularly to help each other stay clean. This is a program of complete abstinence from all drugs. There is only one requirement for membership, the desire to stop using. We suggest that you keep an open mind and give yourself a break. Our program is a set of principles written so simply that we can follow them in our daily lives. The most important thing about them is that they work. There are no strings attached to NA. We are not affiliated with any other organization. We have no initiation fees or dues, no pledges to sign, no promises to make to anyone. We are not connected with any political, religious, or law enforcement groups and are under no surveillance at any time. Anyone may join us regardless of age, race, sexual identity, creed, religion, or lack of religion. We are not interested in what or how much you used, who your connections were, what you have done in the past, how much or how little you have, but only in what you want to do about your problem and how we can help. The newcomer is the most important person at any meeting because we can only keep what we have by giving it away. We have learned from our group experience that those who keep coming to our meetings regularly stay clean.
Thank you. I have asked Cheryl P. from San Jose, California to read Why Are We Here?
Hi, my name is Cheryl and I'm an addict. Why are we here? Before coming to the fellowship of NA, we cannot manage our own lives. We cannot live and enjoy life as other people do. We had to have something different, and we thought we had found it in drugs. We placed our use ahead of our welfare, of our families, our wives, husbands, and our children. We had to have drugs at all costs. We did many people great harm, but most of all, we harmed ourselves. Through our inability to accept personal responsibilities, we were actually creating our own problems. We seemed to be incapable of facing life on its own terms. Most of us realized that in our addiction, we were slowly committing suicide. But addiction is such a cunning enemy of life that we had lost the power to do anything about it. Many of us ended up in jail or sought help through medicine, religion, and psychiatry. None of these methods was sufficient for us. Our disease always resurfaced or continued to progress until, in desperation, we sought help from each other in Narcotics Anonymous. After coming to NA, we realized that we were sick people. We suffered from a disease from which there is no known cure. It can, however, be arrested at some point, and recovery is impossible.
Thanks, Cheryl. At this time, I would like to introduce our first speaker, and that is Karen E. from Minnesota.
Hi, I'm Karen. I'm an addict. I'm very excited to be here. Not only in Hawaii, but at the World Convention, and it's a tremendous honor to be asked to share. I always wonder how they figure out who they're going to be able to get to share, and you know, who knows who, and who hears what from who, and what regions and areas about who they're going to get. And sometimes I think the selection process is a little twisted. But I see that happen in the local areas and at regional areas, you know, too. There's some people with really strong messages that rarely get asked to present at events. So anyway, I'm grateful to be here. My home group is Addicts for Life at 8 o'clock on Friday night. We are now meeting at Fairview University Hospital in Minneapolis. We've been at the food center in the basement of a hospital and in a small room at the hospital, and we've had to move around a lot. But the meetings remain strong, and fortunately there's a lot of people with long-term recovery in that Friday night meeting. And we're in a facility with a treatment center. So we get a nice balance of people with, you know, 15 to 25 years clean, and then a lot of people that are still in treatment, trying to figure out what they're going to do, or struggling, and then there's all, you know, a mix of everybody in between. One of the things I really love about NA is the diversity of people that attend meetings in Minneapolis. You know, there's really rich people and really poor people, and there's people of all cultural varieties and attitudes, and it's really always been important to me in NA to support the diversity in meetings. It's kind of funny because I worked on the women's NA convention called Circle of Sisters, and it was big hoo-ha about whether or not that was a traditions violation. And there are women's meetings, there are men's meetings, and there are people who feel more comfortable in a certain kind of environment with certain kinds of individuals. To me, meetings are kind of like bars. You know, when you come up to a bar, you're not really sure what's going on inside, but you go in, it could be all bikers. You know, it could be like a hip-hop place. It could be like old guys sitting at the bar since this morning. Or, you know, you don't know until you get in there what the atmosphere is going to be like, and meetings are like that for me. So I tell people, you know, go a few times, see what it's like, and you get a real feel for different meetings by being in them. But I like being in a very blended meeting because I get a lot of cross-section of information. I've been really lucky to have been able to stay clean through the people in NA and my higher power and working the steps and going to meetings and doing what I've done day after day after day to stay clean. My first day clean during this last period of consistent recovery is July 29th, 1985. And the first 10 years I was clean this time, I figured I was never going to make it. Every year I spent probably 3 or 4 weeks out of that year pretty heavily wanting to get high, thinking that's it, I'm going to get high, I know I'm not going to make it. I had this compulsion to use, a desire to use, and it would be great, like 10 months out of the year. But there'd be a week here, or a couple of days there, or a week here, or a couple of weeks here, especially if I was on vacation someplace. I think, well, that's it. I can get just completely wasted, and I can just go upstairs, and I don't have to take care of anything, and, you know, all these rationalizations. The disease of addiction for me is really about the insanity of the thought process. Well, I can probably just drink. Well, I can probably just use wine. I can probably just get high on vacation. I can probably just get high this weekend. And then, you know, so even after I got clean this last time and knew, absolutely convinced I was an addict, couldn't talk me out of it anymore. My addict still wants to try to convince me that I could just use a little somehow, that somehow I don't have the disease of addiction, that I can use recreationally, or that it's not that big a deal for me. So I have to watch that thinking. I just want to share a little bit about my using, and this is the topic of this is overtime, not overnight, which is really hysterical for me because I'm one of the least patient individuals on the planet. Not only should it have been overnight, it should have been actually yesterday. So when I told my friends the topic, they were just really amused by that. I went to treatment the first time when I was 16, and I went through 2 inpatient treatments and 6 months and a half went house. And I was able to stay clean as long as I was in a structured environment. But I had basically no functional skills. I didn't know how to talk to anybody. I didn't know how to be responsible and get up in the morning or go for a job. I didn't know how to interact with people. I couldn't share my feelings. I was completely full of it. And nobody basically gave me any kind of training as to life skills. I was going to meetings, although I was going to young people's AA back then. That was probably the mid-'70s, early 70s. And I never really caught what people meant by working the steps. You know, I'd go to the meetings. They said, go to these meetings, you'll be all right. And, you know, I went to the meetings, and I was fine as long as somebody's watching me. But as soon as I got out, I had never really connected with anybody in the fellowship, and so out of loneliness, I ended up going back into using because that was where I knew I could connect with some people very quickly. Got busted for sales, did time at federal prison between the ages of 19 and 21, did 18 months in a therapeutic community, and back in the 70s, they had interesting ideas about psychotherapy. They said I glamorized my past, so I had to wear a big glamorous gown every day. And then I had these giant sandwich signs with my behaviors on them. So one of the signs said, I make my own rules. And then the sign on the back had something else, although I can't remember what it was because I wasn't looking at it. And then I had a verbal, so before I said anything, I had to say, I want what I want when I want it. How you doing? I want what I want when I want it. Can you pass the salt? Okay. So for 18 months, I lived here. A lot of behavior mod groups for like 48 hours of stretch with no sleep, trying to break down defenses. I was actually very fortunate to be in that facility. I had gone there prior to my sentencing because I thought, okay, if I can find the most intense, obnoxious program available, maybe they won't send me to prison, you know. So I went, I did 6 months, and then I went to jail, and the guy was like, nice try, you know. So I went, I did my time, but I knew that I didn't have the skills not to be a revolving door in and out of the prison system. I thought, you know, you're going to be in and out of here forever, because every time you use, you end up feeling, and it's just going to go on and on, and I somebody's got to help me, somebody has, I have to fix something. So I went back to this place, got the therapy I could from it, started going to meetings for a couple of years, and then quit going to meetings. Never, again, never really understood what working the steps meant. Met my ex-husband, and he drank. And after about 9 months of being with him, I thought, well, you know, the drugs were really the problem, and I probably can drink. You know, I had this adolescent behavior problem, and they trained me how to be normal now, and I can work, and I can share my feelings and all this. So I can probably just drink. And I did just drink for about 6 months in a really focused, controlled way that I was very excited about. And after about 6 months, I started doing just a little something else so that I could just stay up a little longer and drink a little more, only at parties, you know, which were every weekend. And then after a while, obviously I became a flaming nutcase. My ex-husband had no idea what he was getting into when he said, well, I think maybe you should just be able to have a drink, you know. I was, no, you don't understand. This is really a big issue for me. Well, I don't think it'd be that big a problem. You could probably just drink. You know, I don't think you really understand. Anyway, so I got clean again in 85, and my ex-husband continued to use, although he cut way back. But I resented the fact that he could get high. It really pissed me off that he'd take a break in the action every now and then, and I couldn't. And I told him, you know, I can't be in a house with illegal narcotics. I got prior, you know, convictions and everything, and I just can't stay here if this is going to go on. So I did end up divorcing him, and I'm married now to an addict I met when I had 5 years clean, recovering addict with a year clean longer than I have. And that marriage is absolutely godsent. Phenomenal relationship, like beyond my wildest dreams. You know, you hear a lot of these stupid cliches in meetings. Oh, yeah, you know. The reason people say them is because they're absolutely true. You know, I finally figured out what working the steps meant when I got clean this last time. I was in the treatment facility at the same hospital that I'm at a meeting now at my home group. And there was an NA meeting in that building. And I had never seen a Narcotics Anonymous basic text, and it had just come out like about a year before or so. And I saw somebody walking around with one. I said, where did you get that? And they said, oh, well, they've got them at the desk, you know, if you want to buy one. They gave you all this AA literature, but the only way you could get any literature is if you asked for it and you kind of were lucky enough to run across it. So I got the NA book, and they had a meeting list in the hallway. There were about 8 meetings in the Twin Cities of Minneapolis-St. Paul at that time, maybe 10. And when I went down on Sunday nights at 7 o'clock to this little meeting, there were 3 other people in the room. So it was me and 3 other people. And the longest clean time was 2 years. And that guy is out there now. He you know, hasn't made it through this time. But one of the guys that was sitting in that meeting is a guy named Kent, who's absolutely my dearest friend in the world, next to Holly, who's actually my bestest millionaire friend. Anyway, he was in that same meeting that first night, and he and I are still in the same meeting and still absolutely the closest of friends. We usually travel conventions together, and he should have been here, but that's a long drama. Anyway, I went to that meeting, and I felt like these are the people I partied with. You know, I felt very comfortable there. And I started sharing. The first 6 months I was clean, I went to meetings 6 nights a week, because I wanted to get high every day, and so the only way I could get through the day was to try to make it until the meeting started. And then after the meeting, I felt a little better usually, and it was kind of later by then, and I could, like, hold on. I really didn't have any skills to stay clean at that point. The desperation was pushing me through day by day. I had the literature. I read the literature regularly, and one of my first sponsors told me that I had to call another recovering addict every single day. And I couldn't talk back then at all. I mean, I saw people hanging around after the meeting. I thought, oh, my, how do you do this? I just wanted to run out of there. Like, oh, my God, I'm scared to death of these people. You know, I just, like, come late, so I didn't have to talk to anybody. I'd run out of there as soon as it was over. We're going for coffee. See ya. I'll see ya, you know. First few times I tried to call anybody, I thought, they're going to pick up the phone and go, oh, my God, it's Karen. Figure something out, man. Figure something out. You got to hang up, you know. Just, I felt like such a pain in the ass, and I felt like I was such an inconvenience in other people's lives, and that I was taking their time, and I was a bother. And so to try to call to ask for intervention or help or emotional support, oh, I didn't deserve it. You know, I was a pain in the ass, and why would people want to talk to me, you know? Now that I've been clean a really long time, I understand that when people call me, I get a lot more out of it half the time than they do. It's really an honor and a blessing to get a call from a newcomer. One of my sponsees, well, this wasn't the greatest blessing, but one of my sponsees called me last night at 4:30 in the morning on my cell because she thought it was the same time as Minnesota. And that's 9:30, you know. But it helps me remember where I came from. It helps me remember the desperation when I have a lot of newcomers in my life. In terms of working the steps, up until this last time getting clean, I started trying to get clean at 16, and I didn't get clean the last time until I was 28. So it took me 12 years of constant psychotherapy, in and out of prison, in and out of halfway houses, treatment centers, long-term therapeutic communities, meetings. I had tried, like, everything I could come across, and it took me 12 years to get to a point where I could actually stay clean for any prolonged period of time. And the reason I've been able to stay clean since then is only because of Narcotics Anonymous, because of the people in it and the fact that the bulb came on in my head, finally, about what working the steps means. Really, to me, it's almost a cognitive behavioral approach to life. In that was easier for me to kind of understand, that it was kind of a therapeutic technique in my mind. Up until this last recovery session, I always thought, well, maybe at some point I could drink, you know. Now, obviously, the drugs were a problem because they were legal and stuff, but, you know, there must be some way I can get high here eventually if I could just get it together well enough. When I got clean this time, I was absolutely convinced I cannot use. I can't use. If I use anything, I'm eventually going to end up back using what I want. I don't use in a controlled way whatsoever. I'm not a social user. I'll steal yours and anybody else's that's available. And I'm a hazard to myself and others, basically. So I had the first step. I really believed that I was powerless over my addiction, that if I let my addiction in the door, it was going to kill me with a knife. You know, I had to keep my addiction outside the door in whatever way I could do that. My life was obviously unmanageable. I was up for days at a time. I was, you know, sick all the time. I was spending every cent I had getting high. And then I managed to show up for work and stuff, but I was going to start dealing again. And as soon as I thought, I've got to start dealing, I just can't keep up. I thought, all right, that's it. You're going to lock up. I mean, this has got to stop. The second step came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. I was willing to pursue options at that point. I went to treatment. I went to meetings. I was looking for help, and I believed that it was possible that maybe somebody could help me with my addiction, so I was still pursuing options. I hadn't given up hope completely. The third step says, made a decision to turn our will and lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Well, I got up to step two, and then step three was kind of a problem for me. I come from a very scientific family, and I was like, you got to be an idiot to believe in a higher power. I mean, come on, God of lightning, God of thunder, get me out of here, you know. But people said to me, well, if you go back to using, what happens? And basically it's prison, lockup, or I'm going to drag the bottom. Like, I probably wouldn't die, you know, that's the whole thing. I probably wouldn't die. I'd probably just be like this horrendously pitiful, tragic case of an individual, you know, tortured day after day. They said, you need to get a higher power. You have to get a higher power. It's not like an option, you know. If you want to stay clean, you got to learn to work the 12 steps, and one of those things means getting a higher power. Well, I couldn't go with the cosmic kind at first, so I went with the group. I thought, well, if you got, you know, several recovering addicts sitting in a meeting together, all the information they can give me is more powerful than what I can come up with myself. I also had, like, family that was interested in helping me stay clean and therapists. There were people in my life that I felt could be a power greater than myself in terms of learning. I started trying to work on a cosmic higher power. I grew up in a very religious family, so when I was little, I had this image, this old white guy in the clouds, you know. and so I started kind of trying to interact with that image and talking to it. And I thought, you know what? You're talking to yourself, you know. You're losing it here. But people said, you got to keep doing it, you know. And I was staying clean, and I was trying to participate in whatever way I could and take instruction from people. After about 90 days of talking to this little image in my head, I started feeling better when I did it. I started getting kind of an emotional reaction to it. And I thought, oh, man, this feels better. And I'm all about feeling better. So anything that's going to make me feel better, I go after with a vengeance generally. So I got pretty obsessional about turning things over to my higher power, saying the serenity prayer. I mean, I spent hours a day doing that. I was really chronically depressed. A lot of the drugs I did, you know, I did at very heavy levels over prolonged periods of time. And I have probably got, you know, permanent damage to some neurotransmission systems. So I was really depressed. The first 6 months, I talked about wanting to kill myself all the time. I didn't talk about recovery because I didn't have any information about that. I just wanted to get through the day. And when I started talking to this higher power that I was developing, and I started feeling better, then I pursued that. And my relationship with higher power has changed significantly over the years. It's just something I always know I can go back to on a daily basis. If I want to feel better, if I need help with something, just to be grateful. The fourth and fifth step, I'd done some fourth and fifth steps before in treatment, and you know, I officially sat down, wrote up everything I could think of, good and bad, and then met with a priest. It was too freaky for me to think of sharing it with, you know, another addict or anything at that point. I've written several fourth steps in my recovery. In fact, I started working on a workbook in January of this year, the NA workbook, specifically on my rescuing and fixing behavior. People think the Salvation Army has a bunch of buildings out here where you can get, like, food and clothing and stuff, but they don't understand I'm the Salvation Army. See, that Salvation Army right here, you know, and I allow these buildings to you know, go on, but, you know. So I've really been trying to work on this behavior and get it managed. And one of the things I can do in that is to ask my higher power for help with that behavior. The sixth step talk and the seventh step talk about identifying character defects, becoming aware of what those are, and humbly asking your higher power for help with those. And I've been fortunate enough to be able to change a lot of behaviors and a lot of attitudes over my years in recovery. I was listening to a speaker earlier today that talked about forgiveness. And what I found is that over time, I'm much more forgiving and tolerant of other people. And the more I allow myself to be human, and the more I allow myself to be kind of a jerky asshole from time to time without beating myself endlessly about it, the more I can allow other people to be human, to have their character defects without me going into a ballistic scene about it. And it just feels a lot better, being tolerant and accepting of others. It's a whole lot of crap that I can't control that I don't have to get involved with. The eighth and ninth step talks about writing up a list of people we'd harmed and trying to make amends to them all. One of those people on the list was me, okay? And so I had to spend years and years outside the fellowship pursuing other kinds of options, like I work out. Okay, I've been working out since I got clean. One thing is it elevates my mood, makes me feel better. Secondly, I can eat a lot more if I work out. So I have a pedometer, and I walk 10,000 steps a day generally, which is about 6 miles. And I can pretty much eat what I want, which is really what I want. So in society, I've had to, if you look at the medallion, it talks about God, self, society, and service. And so I had to work on myself, but some of that stuff doesn't happen in the rooms, like the working out, okay, seeing a therapist, working on my financial issues, going back to school so I can become a responsible member of society. The first time I got clean, I got my GED because I quit school in 10th grade. And the second time I got clean, I started working on my BA, but then I went to prison. And I did take some classes while I was there, but you know, it wasn't enough to get out of college or anything. When I got clean this last time, I finished my BA, and then I started my master's, and then I started my doctorate. And in my family, to get out of my family, you have to get a doctorate. Okay, most people have to graduate high school to get out of their family. So I just had to do that, you know, internally to kind of take care of something. I didn't finish the doctorate because I realized financially it was a bad mistake for me in terms of what I could do without it or whatever. But just the fact that I got in kind of took care of that with my mother. And internally for me, in relationship to her. So going back to school and trying to put together a semblance of a normal life has allowed me to, you know, work for a living and make better money than I would have otherwise. I felt like I could never make amends to my mother. That I had, like, I didn't rip off other people, and I thought, well, I'm not a thief, you know. And I was very proud of the fact that I wasn't a thief. But I always ripped off my mother. And I thought, well, what am I going to do, win the lottery and then, you know, come into all this money and pay her off or something? And I was about 5 years clean, and I thought, you know what I can do? Every month I can buy her a savings bond for $100. Now, I'm an addict. It only costs me 50, okay? So I pay $50 a month to buy this $100 savings bond, and then over time it matures. And every month I would buy her a savings bond, you know? And she knows I'm greedy as hell. So for me to send her that, she knew was, you know, a big transition. There were little things that I was able to do like that. I know that I've made amends to my family. Amends to me is making things right. And for me, that means making things right with myself, emotionally, physically, spiritually, whatever, financially, and then making things right with the people in my life. And my mother made me the I'm the oldest of four kids in my family. She made the executor over their finances when they die. And my parents have probably close to $1 million. Okay, now, if I hadn't made things right with my mother up to this point, that would not have happened. It's all the little things I do week to week, calling her, asking her how she's doing, visiting my brother, help bringing his kids, having them stay overnight, trying to be of love and assistance to the family rather than being the biggest pain in the ass anybody's ever met. And I have to actively work on that. If I'm not working into my recovery, then I'm falling back into relapse mode generally. It's not like there's a place you can just stay. You have to kind of be moving one direction or the other. The 10th step talks about taking a personal inventory and when we're wrong, promptly admitting it. I own a company now, and I've hired some people in NA. And one of the women that was in my wedding, who I've known for almost 18 years, worked for me. And when her employment ended, it went very badly. Okay, and we haven't talked in about a year almost. And I tried calling her sometimes, and, you know, she just wouldn't deal with it. So that's what started me doing this workbook on my fixing behavior and rescuing behavior, because she was caught up in that even though she didn't know it, basically. And we were at a wedding a few weeks ago, and I asked her if she'd come outside and talk to me, and I explained to her how she had gotten caught up in this rescuing and fixing behavior. But a year ago, I couldn't tell her that because I didn't have that information. I mean, I knew I had those behaviors, but I couldn't really explain it to her in a way that she could go, yeah, you're right, and yeah, you're right about that, and yeah, I've been watching you do that for a long time, and, you know, I need to be able to take responsibility for that and to be able to change that. The only way I can do that is to really dig in and really understand my motivations. The 11th step, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. It took me about 18 months to get the praying only for a knowledge of his will for us part. I was praying for a Mercedes and a house and a TV, and I wasn't getting that much out of it. And then when I realized, oh, you're supposed to pray for God's will in your life, it was amazing how much better that felt, how much better that worked out for me. If I get up in the morning and ask my higher power for help with a behavior that I'm working on or an attitude I'm working on or for anything, it works out. It really works out. You know, now, why I won't do that every day, you know, apparently I have this mission to feel badly, you know, and that one of the things in recovery I have to do is constantly practice saying it's all right to feel good. It's all right to feel good. You can feel all right. You know, you can like yourself. You can think you look all right. You don't have to think you're the ugliest woman on the planet. You don't have to think you're the stupidest idiot that ever lived. You know, you don't have to continue to think these things. Nobody's making you. You know, years ago, I wish I had a stick with the 12 steps on it hanging in front of me so that I would remember to do them all the time because I knew I felt better when I did them. I've done meditation. I've been to, like, I'm not Catholic or anything like that, but I've been to nunneries and spent the weekend in quiet meditation. And there was this place downtown Minneapolis where you could go at lunchtime and they ring a bell and then you sit for 20 minutes and then they ring another bell and everybody leaves. And I've tried several different attempts at meditation because I'm really kind of hyper. And meditation for me is like 30 seconds with your eyes closed. Okay, I'm refreshed, you know. So I've really had to kind of work on that. The most important things that help me in my daily recovery are the relationships that I've developed as a result of being here. I got myself boxed in early on. Everybody I knew was clean. I wouldn't hang out with anybody that used. I wouldn't go any place where people use, first couple of years at least. And so my closest friends are all in recovery. I married somebody that's a recovering addict. I go to meetings regularly. I actually got a job working in the field for about 10 years, although I'm not doing that directly anymore. So if I used, I had so much to lose, man. I had to lose my job and my marriage, and I had to lose my friends. And being a using addict has never really been enough to keep me clean, you know. I had to have, it had to be more that I was going to lose to kind of keep me at that point. Prison was a good motivator, obviously, but losing the love and the intimacy and the trust of the people in my life that I've met in NA, I just can't even begin to tell you, you know. I love some of my friends in NA more than I've ever loved anybody in my life, and I trust them with my life. And I know that they want me to live. You know, whereas the people I used to hung out with really didn't give a shit if I lived or died. And unless I was providing them drugs, and then they certainly didn't want to see anything happen to me. My family has always been there for me. My mother used to drive 8 hours round trip when I was in prison to visit me every 2 weeks. And she used to drag all my brothers and sisters with her half the time. And, I just feel badly for them that they had to go through that. But she has always wanted me to get well, always sending me a treatment, always paying for treatment, always trying to find some way to get better. And I'd been in recovery for a few years in NA, and she said to me, do you have to keep going to those meetings and hanging around all those people, those kind of people? And I'm like, I am one of those people. I said, yes, I have to keep going to these meetings. I stay clean going to these meetings. I'm loved more than I've ever been loved in my life here. I have a life that is beyond my wildest dreams. Financially, in my health, in my relationships, in my marriage, spiritually, I can choose how I want to feel. Now, obviously, if my mother dies, I'm going to be affected by that, but I make a decision about whether I'm going to let somebody else's behavior affect me or not. I make a decision about whether I'm going to let my plane being late affect me or not. I'm not attacked by feelings anymore. I choose to decide how I'm going to feel in a situation, and I let a lot of stuff go because I just feel better that way. The 12th step says, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to addicts and practice these principles in all our affairs. And on the medallion, it talks about service. When I was about 6 months clean, I got involved in a convention in Minnesota, and I couldn't talk at that point. I couldn't say anything, but I showed up for the committee meetings and walked around behind people. Later, I took on GSR positions and treasurer spots. Being the secretary was the best because the secretary had to take the box of stuff with them at night. Every week, they didn't have a place we could store, like, the books and the medallions and stuff. And I wanted to get high one time. I was about 18 months clean. I wanted to get high, and I thought, you know what? I get high. This room full of recovering addicts is going to come looking for this box, you know? I do not want to see those people, okay, if I'm getting high. So I would stay clean because I knew I had to go back with this box, you know? Being in service helped keep me clean. It also surrounded me by people who are very serious about recovery, people who are really putting everything they can into making sure they stay clean. I worked in the area level as the H&I chair, and we actually used to have a giant region, North Dakota, part of North Dakota, South Dakota, Minnesota, a little bit of Wisconsin, a little bit of Canada. And so I was H&I chair in the region, trying to coordinate meetings in hospitals and institutions and stuff. I love doing H&I because it feels good doing H&I, you know? And the only reason I'm clean or know about NA is because there was a meeting in the facility when I was there. So that's really an important thing for me. I think the only other thing that I really want to say is that, you know, I've been clean a little over 20 years now. And I've seen a lot of people over those years kind of go out of the meetings. And people I know 15 years, 13 years, 10 years, 20 years. And to me, it happens a couple of different ways. One is people think they don't need meetings anymore. It's like saying, well, I'm done drinking water. Okay, I'm done drinking water. It's too boring. I'm not going to do it anymore. And for me as an addict, it's not an option not to go to meetings. The only thing that's kept me clean, and I've tried everything else there is going to meetings, being surrounded by the loving people in this fellowship, and doing the stuff on that medallion, and learning how to integrate the steps in my life in the way that I think and behave on a daily basis. Thanks for letting me share. Love you.
Thank you, Karen. I would now like to introduce our second speaker, Michael McGee from Oregon.
I win. I'm good to go. My name is Michael. I'm an addict. She asked me if I was okay now. At my age, bathroom breaks come more often than wanted. I figured better when I wasn't speaking than when I was. And I don't have a lot of control. Like most areas of my life, I don't have a lot of control. You know, they asked me to speak, and I want to thank the Hawaii Fellowship for just putting on a great convention. And I want to thank the World Board Program Group for asking me to do this. It's a privilege and an honor to share at a Narcotics Anonymous convention. It's a privilege to share at any meeting, and it's amazing that anybody would want to listen to me. So. You know, when I got here, nobody wanted to listen to me. As a matter of fact, I think they told me to shut up, you know, take the cotton out of my ears and put it in my mouth, that kind of stuff. And for a bit, I did. Not for long. So I thought, you know, they asked me to speak at this meeting. They told me the topic, you know, and I laughed. And I thought, are they dissing me? Are they dissing me? You know, so... This morning, at 5:30 this morning, not that I was obsessed with doing this or anything, but, you know, I wake up every morning at 5:30, because it's really 8:30, you know, it's Hawaii time, you know, and I searched through this book, you know, just for today to find where in the hell they got this, because I knew I just read it. Well, you know, I've got no memory, and I had to go from front to back, even though it was only, like, a couple days ago, you know, so... I said, you know, so it says, this is a quote from the basic text, and it says, we found that we do not recover physically, mentally, or spiritually overnight. You know, and then it says, this rule is really appropriate on the day that it was on, it was August 15th. It says, have you ever approached a recovery celebration with the feeling that you should be further along in your recovery than you are? Yeah, everyone. Maybe you have listened to newcomers sharing in meetings, members with much less clean time and thought, but I'm just barely beginning to understand what they're talking about. It's odd that we should come into recovery thinking that we will feel wonderful right away. Or no longer have any difficulty handling life's twists and turns. We expect our physical problems to correct themselves, our thinking to become rational, and a fully developed spiritual life to manifest itself overnight. We forget that we spend years abusing our bodies, numbing our minds, and suppressing our awareness of a higher power. We cannot undo the damage in a day. We can, however, apply the next step, go to the next meeting, help the next newcomer. We heal and recover bit by bit, not overnight, but over time. Just for today, my body will heal a little, my mind will become a little clearer, and my relationship with my higher power will strengthen. And so then I had an idea what I was supposed to talk about, because I could just talk about me, and which I will, and I could talk about what it was like, which, you know, I don't have to do that. There's three people in this room who know what it was like. We used together, or it was my son, and we're all clean today, you know. August 15th was a good reading because on August 17th I had 30 years clean. And I got to tell you that when I was 2 months clean or 1 year clean or 5 years clean or 10 years clean or 15 years clean or 20 or 25, whenever, you know. I always thought that you would be somewhere different when you got there, you know. I didn't think this would be exactly where I was when I turned 30 years clean. But truthfully, that was just my delusion of what recovery would bring to me, you know, and what a spiritual awakening was. And it is a very appropriate topic for me because there's been times when I've been rushing into this thing. There's been times when I've been just like a day at a time living, you know, and trying to stay clean. And some days this year, you know, it's been a day at a time just trying to make it to the next day, you know. And I haven't felt like using it a lot of years, you know, 28 or 29 years since I last felt like I really wanted to get loaded. But I have felt a lot of times like I maybe should check out of here, you know, just because I don't fit, I don't feel comfortable, I don't this, I don't that. And that's just the disease. You know, I understand my disease really well. My disease is always trying to separate me from you. It's always trying to separate me from life, you know. And I told a friend of mine yesterday, as we were standing, life is tough. We're standing in the surf, four guys talking a little trash, you know, like we do. And I told him, you know, hey, say yes to life. You know, I'm telling you, it's the truth. Say yes to life. And so what it's really all about is you can be negative or you can be positive. You know, you can be accepting or you can be just completely screwed up. And I've had some days when I've been completely screwed up, you know. I got my only two sponsors in my whole recovery sitting in this room today. And it's a privilege and an honor to have those guys here. And they've both been helping my ass a lot lately. You know, the one thing I know that happens is that life shows up for all of us. At some point, something's going to come along and kick you in your complacent ass. You will move or you will go. Because it's always the same decision, ultimately. You know, it doesn't ever get to be a different choice, a different decision. Is am I going to stay clean or am I not going to stay clean? And, you know, I have consistently made a decision to always stay clean. You know, and people that hear me share know that, you know, I will tell you all day long that no matter what you don't use, no matter what you don't use, no matter what, you know, you can't use. You know, people relapse. I understand that. I know that a lot of everybody's story is relapse. It ain't part of my story. I know everything I ever learned about relapse from you guys or whoever out here is talking about it, because I have no personal experience with that. And you know what? I don't need none. You know, just for today, I don't need any, you know. I thought a lot about, like, what does this mean? You know, I was coming up on the birthday anyway. I've been doing a lot of introspection, you know, and I listened to Karen talk about meditation and connecting with a higher power, and I've been doing a lot of that this year. You know, I'm one of those folks who kind of ebbs and flows in the connection department, you know, or at least in the practice of that. I think I'm probably always connected, but I just don't stay aware, you know, so that when things come up, I always know the right things to do, you know. So I call my sponsor first, and that usually works, although and one day this year I called my sponsor about 20 times and his phone was broken. It was like a day I really wanted to talk to him. But, he got a hold of me eventually, you know. And by then I was, like, a little more rational, you know, and could hear. I think at that point I could hear what he had to say instead of want to, you know, go where my head was going. And so the process for me has been really slow at times, you know. I mean, I don't know how you can stay 30 years clean and not change. So I haven't, you know. I've changed a lot, you know. And the folks that knew me when, they really get that, you know, and sometimes I really get that, you know. Number one, I got really old and really gray. You know, the trick around here is if you want to be an old timer, you don't die and you don't use, and guess what? Someday you stand up and everybody goes, wow, you know, wow, you look really old. Glad you're clean, too, you know. But, you know, I'm amazed. You know, I was definitely voted in treatment to the least likely to succeed. As a matter of fact, the director of the treatment center said, this guy ain't going to make it. But, you know, she helped me get better. You know. Sometimes you have to take a personal hand in people's recovery, and I appreciated that. And, you know, life's good sometimes, you know. You knew. I have a newcomer right now. I don't usually sponsor newcomers, you know. They're usually, like, really, I don't know what, you know. They don't like what I have to say because it's not relating to where they're at, or I scare them, or I'm unapproachable, or I got a whole list of things it could be. Maybe it's because I just got nothing to say, you know. But I got this guy recently, and he's just been such a kick in the ass, you know. I mean, he's like wet, you know. He's just new. He's like a giant puppy flopping all over the place, you know. And I just love this guy, you know. And that's like really new for me, you know. I've hung around with people with clean time ever since I got here, you know. And I think that was the right move for me. You know, the people that I knew that used, I got away from them as fast as I could. You told me to hang around with the winners, and I always have, you know. Most of the guys I sponsor got 8 years, 9 years, 10 years when they come to me, you know. So this guy, you know, he came, and I was like, boy, I don't know, you know. But it's just been amazing, you know. It's just been amazing because of what it does for me, you know. And I thank him almost every single day, you know, for being in my life, you know, because it's just rejuvenated me in a lot of really good ways, you know. I mean, between life showing up and him coming in at the same time, it's been great for me, you know. I go to a ton of meetings, you know. I mean, I hear people talk about meeting attendance, you know. When I got clean, I went to meetings every single day because I had to, not because I wanted to, because that's where I lived. They made you go to meetings. You had to do 7 a week. And when I checked out of that place, actually, they threw me out. After I was escorted out the door, I went to a lot of meetings. And then I got back into life, you know. And life for me was working nights and weekends and catching one meeting a week for a long time. So maybe 8 years in a row, that's what I did on a regular basis, was one meeting a week. And God helped me find a way out of that and got me divorced. Actually, I think I did that, but he didn't kick me to the curb when it happened. And I threw myself into recovery, which is what I always do. When shit happens in my life, I get right into it, you know. And I started going to a lot of meetings, and I've been a pretty regular meeting attender ever since. You know, there's been some ups and downs, but lately, you know, I'm down for 5 or 6 meetings a week, you know. And there ain't many guys where I go to meetings. Number one, there's only me and another guy in town who got 30 years clean, and he goes to a lot of meetings, and so do I. And I think we're a damn good example of what you do when you got time, man, you know. You know, you hear all the time about, well, everybody with time goes away, you know, or there's no, you know, when I got clean, and I know it still happens today, and it really fries me that it still happens today, is that there's no recovery in NA. Well, that's ridiculous, you know. How many people in this room got over 20 years clean? Hello. There's a boatload of time in Narcotics Anonymous. There is just the most high-quality recovery you could ever imagine in Narcotics Anonymous. And for 30 years, I have not chosen to go any other fellowship than Narcotics Anonymous because I got all I need here. That's what makes those fellowships wrong. Ain't nothing wrong, you know. It's just, this is where I fit. See, for me, it was just like that bar. It's just like that bar, you know. I wouldn't have thought of it that way, and I like that twist because I am one twisted dude. But I found a place that I fit in, you know. When I sit down and talk to an addict, I know who they are. They know who I am. We share from the heart. And that's what this is all about, you know. It's making that connection for me, you know. In the years that I've struggled on and off trying to connect with a higher power, the place that I've always been able to do that is either in a meeting or talking to an addict, you know. Because I look for that spark of a higher consciousness in you, you know. And I look to you to reflect all of this stuff for me, you know, because I can't see me worth shit, you know. I need people so I can see me. You know, the mirror don't work too well, you know. I get full of denial and rationalization and all the things that we do when we're trying to analyze and be our own sponsor, you know. That doesn't work good, you know. I have people that tell me what they think of me. Sometimes I like that. Not always, you know. But I have a lot of close friends and people in Narcotics Anonymous that are honest with me. You know, and that's a requirement for us, you know. Because if I think you're screwing up or if you think I'm screwing up, you need to say so. You know, it says in the book that we're our own eyes and ears, you know, and that we watch out for each other. You know, and you can't do that if you see me screwing up and just turn your head away, you know. And the other thing that we do here, which is kind of weird, is we talk about anonymity and being an anonymous program, which is good. But I think we're goofed up a little bit. You know, Narcotics Anonymous is not a secret society from us. You know, we have a public presence, a public image, a public relations policy, blah, blah, blah. But here, we're not supposed to not know who we are. You know, I mean, come visit me in the hospital and try to find me if you don't know my last name, which is McDermott. you know. And I live in a place called Camas, Washington, C-A-M-A-S, Washington, and I'm in the phone book, you know, because I'm like a productive member of society. I live in this world, and this is the world I really live in. And if you don't know who I am, how the hell can I be of assistance to you or you to me? You know, it's like, I like to do that because, number one, it gets everybody up. But it's the reality, you know, it's like, how many people do I know that I don't know what their last name is? I have no idea. You know, it's Joe C. Yeah, good. Go find Joe C. when you need him. If he ain't in the meeting you're going to, you know. It's been a really bizarre and strange and wonderful journey in Narcotics Anonymous, you know, I really, you know, my first sponsor's sitting here, and I just talked about this at my birthday party, but I'll talk about it again, I think. When I got clean and I was in treatment, I was doing what everybody at that point did when they got clean and went in treatment. They had to go on welfare, you know, because that's the only way the recovery house could stay alive, is to find money from somewhere. There weren't really a lot of grants in 1975. And so we were on our way to the welfare department to sign me up. And I personally had never been on welfare in my life, although certainly my wife had, because I wouldn't pay her child support. I was such a nice guy. I told him, I said, you know, Mac, I don't know what's going to happen here. You know, 90 days, I'll have this down. You know, I read the steps. I got this down, you know. It's like, no problem, you know. Overtime, not overnight. You know, I was all in for the quick fix, you know. Well, what was new? I was always in for the quick fix. I was always into, you know, immediate gratification, you know, and that was a little slow. And otherwise, why would I do the kind of stuff I did? You know, if it didn't happen right away, I was thinking it was bunk. You know, something's wrong with this. It didn't work. You know, I was one of those guys that if I took something and it didn't happen right away, I took some more right away because it was supposed to happen right now. It's kind of scary when you're doing psychedelics to do that, but, you know, I never had any patience, you know. Today I have some patience. You know, I have a little bit more of everything I didn't have when I got here. You know, weight is one of them. Gray hair. But I have a lot more peace and serenity. You know, I talked to a friend of mine today on my way back from the gym. I ran into him. And he's been kind of current on what's going on with me. And we just talked, you know, for a while, you know. And I just told him, I said, you know what? Just for today, I'm really okay. You know, I'm in a really good place. I think I'm in a better place than I was last week, you know, before I got to Hawaii. And that I'm really good with me, you know. And that's such a miracle, you know, because for a lot of my life and some of my recovery, I haven't been good with me. You know, I've had fear and doubt and insecurity and all that stuff that can come in at any time, but I don't live in it, you know. I call my sponsor a lot lately, and I'll run some shit by him, and I'll go, am I crazy? I need some validation. Am I crazy? Yeah, the best answer he gave me was, no, I don't think you're crazy. I agree with you. I'm probably crazy, too. That's my sponsor. I love him, you know. And that's a whole thing that's changed over time and overnight. Because when I got here, you know, I picked the guy that I had used with to be my sponsor. And we were really good friends, and he was a damn good sponsor for me. You know, we did good stuff together. And at some point, he moved, I moved, we went, you know, how things go. And I went for too long without a sponsor, really. You know, I mean, I had one in name, but I never connected. And I was thinking this morning, you know, the World Convention has been a life-changing event for me many, many years, you know. I went to my first World Convention. I had about 40 days clean, and that was that was immense, you know. It was a huge convention. There may have been this many people. I'm not really sure. Maybe a few more. Maybe 400, World Convention. And it was amazing, you know. I mean, I saw addicts for the first time, number one, out of my area, and I realized, wow. This is bigger than just us 40. You know, there's 40 of us in my town. We're all of Narcotics Anonymous in my mind, you know. And it was a world convention, but I guarantee you there was nobody from out of the U.S. there except maybe somebody from Canada, but I don't think there was. You know, and I went to the next one in 76, and I went to the next one in 77, and there was finally one guy from Australia there, you know. And then I didn't go to any world conventions until 1986, you know. I got divorced in like 84, 85, and threw myself back into fellowship. I turned 10 years clean in 85, and I gave myself a gift. You're going to London for the first World Convention off of U.S. soil. And that was a life-changing experience for me. You know, for the first time in my recovery, I really got what we were. You know, there was a guy there, and he read the steps in some language I could hardly understand, and I met people from all over Europe and America, and it was amazing. It was just amazing, you know. The sense of really being for the first time in a worldwide fellowship, I was in awe. And it changed me. It rejuvenated my desire to be a member of Narcotics Anonymous. I'd thrown myself back into fellowship when my ass fell off, but I still was just doing what you always do. You know, you go to meetings, you go to dances, hang out with the sponsor, find a girl, go to dinner, whatever, you know, whatever the daily drill is, you know. And I was just going through my life, you know, doing what you do, staying clean. And that event changed it, you know. I met people who had a passion and a love for Narcotics Anonymous that I had. For the first time, connected, just intense. You know, my first sponsor has been involved in service his whole life here in Narcotics Anonymous. He was in the service in his other life, but that doesn't count. And so I always knew about service, and I always did service at the local level, you know. And I got clean at a time when it was way cool to do service, you know, because everything was a first. There was no area. There was no H&I. There was no literature. There was no structure. There was no phone lines. There was nothing. You know, there was a little white book and a handful of pamphlets, and we, and I get to include myself in that with pride, created it. You know, and what a privilege that is for all of us that were there to do some of that stuff. And everywhere you get to go and outside of the U.S. and you talk to people about what it is for them to be in their fellowship, and there's 30 of them, or there's 50 of them, there's 10 groups, or there's, you know, 100 groups. They just started a region, and they think, it's never been like this before, you know. And I'm going, hey, you know what, man? It's just like this every time. You've got to do it or nobody else will, and that's a privilege, you know. Now you live in a big community, there's 500 meetings a week, you know. You don't got to do service, you know. But for my heart, I got to do service, you know. For my recovery, I have to do service. So when I went to that convention and saw just this amazing thing called Narcotics Anonymous World Fellowship, you know, it just blew me away completely. And I liked those people that I met that were really into it, you know, that really had that passion. And so I went and knew the only place I'd ever meet them was where they did service. And oddly enough, all these people that I thought were so hip did service at the World Service Conference, you know. So I went there the next year with a sponsee in tow, and met a bunch of really great folks again, and hung out with them again, and connected with them again, and talked and learned more and more and more about who we are and what we do, and it became a driving force in my life, you know, to do service, to give something back to this fellowship, became what I was about, and that was a great experience, you know. I'm the addict of the self-obsessed, selfish variety. I know none of you guys are probably like that, you know, but I don't give nobody nothing before I came here. I don't, you know what? I took from you. I took from everybody that ever came into contact with me. You know, I was always about me, you know, and I'll tell you right now, it can be about me. Any time of the day, it can be about me, but I usually pull my head out of that spot fairly rapidly these days. You know, it's a bad view through my belly button. And that's where my head is a lot. You know, I say, whoop, how did I get here again? You know, but I know the way out. You know, I know the way out. You know, and it's usually to make an effort. You know, for me, it's just make an effort. You know, call somebody. You know, I've got a network of folks that I call now that's amazing. I mean, old friends are there for me, and new friends are there for me. It's wonderful because I'm there for them, too. And that's how this thing works, you know. I thought for the first almost 8 years I was here, I had a friend when I was like about 3 years clean, and we hung out everywhere, this guy named Richard. And we hung out, we did everything together, we were just tight as could be, and the jerk used, you know. How could he do that? You know, how could he use, for Christ's sakes? He let me down. Because it was all about me, you know. But it really shut down, you know, and for a long time, only two people in the whole fellowship in the town I lived in knew where I lived, you know. I'd given them my address. I might get close to these people, you know. But when my ass fell off, they were there, you know, and I'm not like that anymore, you know. I'm just not like that anymore. Those things change, you know, and, And the thing I know is I got to change, you know. And that what I like about coming here to, like, this convention is that I'm sticking my hand out or I'm opening my arms up a lot. And I like that, you know. I love meeting people. I love addicts, you know. I certainly don't get along with them all. But you know what? I love any of us that are trying to do something about this horrible, horrible disease we have, you know. And it's just so amazing that we're so successful. I know people go the other way. They, you know, I'm a half full guy most days. You know, people go, you know, we only have a 10% rate of success. Well, isn't that great? Isn't that great? I mean, you know, 1 out of 10 of us get it. For Christ's sake, none of us are supposed to have it. You know, I don't. It's not an entitlement. You know, you're supposed to get clean and wow, look at me. I got clean because I deserved it. I got clean by grace, man. I got clean because I fell in the doors of a Narcotics Anonymous meeting, and I haven't fallen out since, you know. You know, and, you know, just for today, there is nothing in the world that'll get me out of this program. You know, the only person that can throw me out of here is this guy right in front of you. None of you ever asked me to leave, you know. My head tells me I don't deserve that seat. My head tells me I don't belong here. My attitude tells me, ah, to F them, I'm going somewhere else, you know, like where, you know. you know, because I got a head that works overtime, you know, usually about 190% of capacity. And I come up with this shit, you know, I'm going where? You know, I used to get in fights with my girlfriend, and I'd get in the car. Going, man. Where? Where am I going? It's not time for the meeting, and I ain't going to the bar. Because that's where I would go if I was not clean. I'd get mad at you, and I'd go to the bar. You know, hang out with other miserable bastards that were unhappy with their wives, you know. Commiserate with the psychologist behind the bar, you know, my buddy. My best friend, as long as I'm tipping him, you know. But, I mean, I took a lot of spins around the block, let me tell you. It wasn't like I figured it out right away. You know, it's like, oh, yeah. There ain't nowhere to go except to deal, you know. And God darn, I don't like to have to do that sometimes. I want to be mad and go away. You know, I don't want to be mad, get rational, work on it. You know, it's like, damn, that's a lot of work, you know. But that's the only thing that happens, you know, is that if you don't do that, you got nothing going. You know, I can get mad and go away. Where will I be? I'll be with myself. That's a bad spot, you know. My first sponsor had this job at this treatment center, and he was running the kitchen, and he had, every time I went down there, he had a new bumper sticker on a thing, you know, on his big walk-in refrigerator, you know, an addict alone is in bad company. Yeah, that's me. Spoons are for stirring. I always like that one. Spoons are for stirring. I'm like, yeah, okay. You know, those cliches are lifesavers. You know, I mean, I laugh at them all the time, you know, but you know what? They're lifesavers. They're all up on the walls because they actually work and have relevance. At some point, you'll get it. You know, when it's your ass, that day, that's, you know, the epiphany of a moment. You know, it's like, wow, is that heavy? You know, this program's supposedly simple for complicated people. I'm so complicated, I don't get the simplicity most of the time. You know, I mean, when I realized that if I didn't take nothing, I wouldn't get loaded, I thought that was like Einstein's theory of relativity. Like, wow, that shit is deep, you know. If I don't take nothing, I won't get loaded. Yes, stupid. You could have learned that at 14. You know, and probably all of us, you know, have had those spots, particularly earlier in our recovery, where we just lament the fact that we wasted all these years. You know, I used to go, God, I've wasted 15 years of my life. You know, I'm just a freaking derelict now. I barely got out of high school. I've never got a graduation after high school. God bless you. You know what I mean? Good for you. Because I can't do it, you know. I just can't do that. And, but I lost exactly what I was going to say. Sad to hell, it wasn't worthwhile. Come back. Okay. So, I just keep doing this thing, you know. I don't know where else to do it. I don't know where else to go. I don't know any other way, you know. I guess I'm a habitualized kind of person, you know. Because I'm an addict, I pick up a habit and stick with it, you know. And so, my habit is staying clean. It's a good habit. You know, my habit is to wake up in the morning and thank God that I'm clean today, you know. And ask Him, you know, for knowledge of His will and the power to carry that out. And I mean every day. you know, and to try to meditate, although, boy, does 30 seconds sound long. You know, some days I just go, what in the hell is wrong with my brain? Because, you know, my meditative state is like, I had it for a second. It's gone again. And it, you know, and the best I can do is to, like, do mantra kind of stuff. You know, it's the only thing I can do to not run. You know, so it's like, breathe in, breathe out. I'd say it to myself all the way. Breathe in, breathe out. You know, God is love. Love is God. God is love. It's the only thing that shuts the head off, you know. But it's just an amazing process, you know, to just take enough time out in my life for me. Because that's the selfish part of my recovery program, and it's the only part that probably is that what am I doing to take care of me? You know, how am I working a program that's about me staying clean? Because my program's not about you staying clean. I hope you each have your own program that's helping you stay clean, and it's the Narcotics Anonymous program, you know. My program is not something I invented. It's in this book. You know, it's the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Narcotics Anonymous. There's no special little thing that I do that's any different than anything that's written down here. You know, I don't take nothing. I, you know, try to practice the principles in my life. Sometimes I work the steps. Sometimes I don't. I write them anyway. I think I work them all the time, but I don't always write a lot. And I haven't written for a long time. My sponsor's asking me to write, as he should be. And I'm always committing that I will, as I should. And I don't. So I've been sitting on a first step for, I don't know, this time around, maybe a year. No, maybe even 5 or 6 months at this run. And I, you know, I have all these guys that are working the steps, and I'm going, oh Jesus, these guys are just really ripping it up. Wish they'd slow down. But yes, it's what I know how to do. You know what I mean? It's like I don't have any doubt in my mind of what to do with myself every single day about how to stay clean and how to keep growing. You know, and how to make this thing work for me and to share it with you. You know. Sometimes I have a lot of doubt, you know. I mean, I probably like most of us, but for sure like me, you know, I'm one of those addicts that has a gigantic ego backed up by a really huge inferiority complex, you know. And so all the fronts are to cover up, you know. And, you know, I tell people, no, I'm really shy. And they go, oh, you're out of your mind. But you know what? If I don't know you, I'm really shy. You know, I'm going to stand on the wall and figure it out. That's the kind of addict I am. You know, I'm going to sit in the back of the room and get the set. You know, once I get the set, then I can come in. You know what I'm saying? Because that's where I came from. You know, it's like figure out what the deal is, find out what's right, then you can present. You know, and I've been here long enough. I know what's right, and I know how to present. You know, I show up and tell the truth. You know, and I don't like to tell the truth all the time. Well, I mean, certain situations I never like to tell the truth, but I mean, just getting up and sharing. You know, and just telling the truth. Because you know, I mean, I want to look good. I want to be, you know, admired for my recovery and all that kind of stuff. You know, I want to be asked back somewhere. And, you know, the truth is, you know, that I'm an addict. I've been clean for 30 years. I make mistakes on a regular basis. I've made some terrible, terrible mistakes in my recovery. And I've stayed clean through them all. And the people I've been involved with in those mistakes are all still clean, too. That doesn't speak to me about what I'm about. It speaks to what this program is about. Is that no matter what happens to us in our recovery, we can stay clean. You know, I've had one of my closest friends from when I was using died about, I don't know, 5 or 6 or 7 years ago. I can't remember because I'm trying to block it out of my brain most of the time. He died clean. I never thought he'd, you know, get clean, let alone die clean. You know, in 1975, he was kicking on my couch, you know, in my very first apartment in life of my own. Yeah, and he was kicking on my couch, and I gave him a basic test the next time he rolled through. You know, probably a first edition, damn it. You know, he got loaded again. But you know what? He got clean. You know, and I'll never forget that day he called me up, you know, and said, hey, I'm out at St. Anthony's Pig Farm, or wherever the hell he was. And I said, yeah, well, so what are you doing? He says, well, I'm clean. I said, okay. And I've heard it before, you know. It's like, so what's new? He says, no, I'm staying clean this time. I said, okay. So I'll see you at a meeting then, right? And, you know, he had 9 years clean when he died from cancer, you know. And to me, that, you know what? If anything else happens in my life, I, you know, have any control over, I want to die clean. That's my goal. You know, I haven't hit my goal yet because when I got here, I figured it out. You know how you do. Okay, how old will I be when? You know, and if it wasn't 30, that was my deal. You know, it's like my deal is, you know, I want to be 50 years clean. You know, that's my goal. I got a damn good chance at it if I don't use nothing because my family lives a long time. You know, And I want to be that old gummer, man. I want to be that guy at the coffee pot, you know, creaking up to the coffee pot, getting a cookie, one of those little shortbread numbers, and just kind of, you know, talking about, you know, when I got here and looking at the young girls, you know, going, God, I remember early recovery, you know. Now, I really don't want to have 50 years clean for all those reasons. There's something in there I might pass up. I'm not sure what it is. But, you know, that, you know, if you get to have goals and dreams, that's mine, you know. In my recovery, I've had great relationships and lost them. I've been married and divorced. I've been, you know, bankrupt. I've been wealthier than I used to be. You know, I've been employed and fired. I was fired 5 times in recovery by the same guy. And then I got the second step and I went, aha, don't go back to work for him the next time he comes begging. You know, because my ego was getting a little shattered here. You know, it's like the fifth time he fired me. I was like, what the hell? Is it about me? You know, all this stuff that, you know, we set up as things that can't happen to us because we'll never stay clean, they're all bullshit. You know, anything can happen to you and you can stay clean through it. You know, my father died when I was 3 years clean. You know, stuff happens. You know, life shows up for us. You know, and the different thing is today, I don't have to use, you know, and what a blessing that is, you know. What a gift it is to be in Hawaii for a world convention, you know. I've been here a lot of times, you know, but when I came in this time, I thought a lot about the first time I came to the islands. You know, the first time I came to the islands was 1970, and my wife at the time and my 2 kids had fled the scene wisely. We had split up. It's one of those things where, you know, the best laid plans of most men go awry. You know, I had a plan. I said, you know, I think in 5 or 6 months we should separate. You know, it's not working out, I want to get all this stuff taken care of. 3 days later, she said, I'm moving to Hawaii. You're going to pay for me to go there. And I was like, well, that was not really my plan. You know, but okay. Well, and then we missed each other right away. You know how that goes. And so I ended up flying to Hawaii eventually. You know, and I flew to Hawaii prepared for typical weekend in my life. I came with an ounce of cocaine in a plane, you know, and I lived in the bathroom. In those days, you could smoke on planes, and you could go in the bathroom and snort a lot of dope. And so I was in the bathroom every 10 minutes, man. I mean, you know, it's just like nuts. And I got off the plane in Honolulu. I had a leather bomber jacket on with a wool lining. And I just went, oh, my God, what have I fallen into? And that was my first experience with Hawaii. All I did the whole time I was here was stay as completely twisted on drugs as I could. And everything I experienced was through that vision, you know, of, you know, wow, isn't that a great banyan tree? Yeah, let's smoke another joint, you know. Let's go to the beach. Yeah, let's drink some tequila, you know. And I haven't had to experience life through a clouded perception for a long time. And you know what? It's a lot better. It's a lot clearer. You know, my vision is a lot clearer. My perspective on life is completely different. You know, and they tell us that only thing we can change is us. And the only thing that I work on constantly is to change my perspective of how I see things, because that's what's wrong with the world. The only thing wrong with the world I live in is me. You know, the way my head works, the way I see things, what my perception does, what my feelings create in my head, what my thoughts make me do. You know, and I've been talking for years about, you know what, feelings are just nothing. They come, they go, they pass. You can create your feelings, you know. And that was a big thing to learn, is that I wasn't a victim of what emotion was running through my body at the moment, was that I could change that by thinking differently. And the way that I change how I think is by the way that I act. You know, that I can change my thoughts through right action. I can't think my way to right action. I have to work at it and do it. And so everything I do here, I have to do the hard way. And I think there's only a way to do it. It's the hard way. There's no easier way than working a program, you know, doing what we say, doing the things that we talk about, and changing, you know, and it's not overnight. Thank God it's not overnight. Because if I got what I thought recovery was when I was anywhere from 1 to 10 years clean, I would have just shortchanged the hell out of myself. Not even that gratitude list we talk about all the time. But after I was here for a while and thought what this meant, what this was, you know, what this is a complete change, you know. You know, the good news is you don't got to do it overnight. You know, the good news is it is progress, not perfection. You know, because none of us Well, maybe a couple of us, but not me. I'm not perfect, you know. I've been perfect before. It was really uncomfortable, you know. I've been a perfect ass, you know. That really was no fun. But, I mean, I've strived to be something that was not me, not who I could be, you know. And today, you know, recovery is like this journey of learning who am I, you know. I certainly had no idea who I was when I got here. You know, I have a lot better idea today, you know. And whoever that guy is, I accept him a lot better today, you know. I used to hate being me. I wanted to be you. When Matt got married, I thought I was Superfly. Didn't I? I had a big-ass afro. Doing this, you know. Shirt open down to here. Angel fly pants on, you know. Just cool. Driving a big black car, you know. Black on, black on, black. Yeah. I didn't want to be me. You know, I wanted to be somebody else, man. I wanted to be you. You know, before I came to Narcotics Anonymous, before I found out anything, I wanted to be anybody but me. I wanted to be you real bad. You looked better than I felt. And you know what? Today, you still look better than I feel sometimes. But the truth is, I know that that will change. And I know that if I was in your skin, I would feel just like I do. Because, you know, we have a lot of things in common. The thing that I've learned here more than a lot of others is that I'm a human being. You know, I'm not an addict first anymore, and I was for a long time. I'm a human being, you know. I'm part of the world. I'm part of the planet. I'm part of the greater consciousness, you know, and I love that I'm part of, you know. And we say that, you know, we never have to be alone, and I believe that, you know. If we sit here, we'll never have to be alone again. Thanks very much, and aloha.
Let's once again thank Karen and Michael for speaking. I've asked Vince F. from San Francisco to read Why or We Do Recover.
Hi, I'm Vince. Sorry, recovering addict from San Francisco. We do recover when at the end of our road, we find that we no longer function as a human being, either with or without drugs. We all face the same dilemma. What is there left to do? There seems to be this alternative. Either go on as we can to the bitter end, jails, institutions, or death, or find a new way to live. In years gone by, very few addicts ever had this last choice. Those who are addicted today are more fortunate. For the first time in man's entire history, a simple way has been proving itself in the lives of many addicts. It is available to us all. It is a simple, spiritual, not religious program known as Narcotics Anonymous.
We'll close this meeting in the traditional form.